Good afternoon. You are tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 24th, year 2015. Jeff Brown is here today. We'll get the details about this Friday's Poetry Slam. We'll talk to Linda Wynn, Kate Beer, and Julie Niederhauser about this week's Alaska State Library Association's annual conference. We'll get the details on Saturday's Read Across America event at D.C., and Kristen Guerrero will be here to highlight the Montessori Borealis Open School Open House information meetings, which will occur later this week. That writer's almanac Bruno and Music Award today on a Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy skies. Forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with isolated rain and snow showers in the evening. Wednesday, cloudy skies with a chance of light rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Political leaders in Manitoba, Canada, are fighting back after Winnipeg was recently dubbed the most racist city in the country. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
It came from one of Canada's national magazines, Maclean's, which said, "Welcome to Winnipeg, where Canada's racism problem is at its worst." It argued that the description fit after high-profile attacks on Aboriginal people. They include Facebook comments from a white high school teacher who said Aboriginals have contributed nothing, the death of Aboriginal teenager Tina Fontaine, and the sexual assault against another Aboriginal girl who was left for dead in a river. A First Nations leader stood side by side with Winnipeg's Mayor Brian Bowman and said racism isn't a city problem, it's a national problem. Kevin Chief is Manitoba's minister responsible for the city of Winnipeg. He's also an Aboriginal, and he says in spite of the label slapped on the city, he's proud to be living there.
Well, I think what it is an incredible opportunity, and coming out of the gate, our first step, has been an incredible response. And I don't think that we are going to see this conversation stop. I think this is going to go on in classrooms. I think we're going to hear it from elders. I think we're going to hear it from business leaders. I think we're going to continue to have this conversation in a sincere and in a healthy way. And that's what makes me proud as to live in this city.
The mayor, Brian Bowman, has vowed to fight the label. He says we're not going to end racism tomorrow, but we're going to try. According to Statistics Canada, Manitoba has the highest proportion of Aboriginal people of any province, about 17%, compared to 4% for the entire country. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In South Dakota, the director of the Lakota Nation Invitational says the future of the tournament in Rapid City is in question. The annual high school tournament is among the largest events of the year in the area. It generates millions of dollars in economic impact. The board of directors is considering pulling the event out of the city in the wake of an alleged attack on Native children at a hockey game. Charles Michael Ray reports.
For Brian Brewer, the alleged racial attack on Native children at a minor league hockey game deserved more than a misdemeanor charge of disorderly conduct.
What has happened is totally wrong, we believe. It's almost like it's open season on our children. You can do anything you want to them, and nothing will happen.
Brewer is the former president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and the director of the Lakota Nation Invitational. Patrick Duffy is the defense attorney for Trace O'Connell, who was accused in the incident. Duffy apologizes to Lakota people, but says this incident has been blown out of proportion on social media.
We've got a situation where there's a huge gap between the reality that people believe from what they've seen on the internet and the reality of what happened at that game. My client made no racist comments to anyone.
But for many like Brewer, this issue raises bigger questions. The basketball tournament art show and high school event known as the LNI draws in schools from around the region each December. In one sense, Brewer says Rapid City and the Black Hills are on Lakota Treaty land. So he says Native people should make a stand against racism. But on the other hand, he says,
as a director, I have to look out what's best for our children. I have to look out for their safety. And this is going to be a big consideration. If I can't guarantee their safety in Rapid City, then I'm going to suggest that we do move.
Brewer says LNI officials will meet with Rapid City leaders and follow the outcome of this issue over the coming weeks. He says the board will make its final decision on whether to remain in Rapid City at its meeting in April. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Gathering of Nations to the UNM Pitt April 24th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau. You're on a June afternoon. My first guests are Christine Nami Erickson and MJ Grandy, here to talk about this Friday's Poetry Slam and Open Mic. Thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you so much for having us, Jess.
It's great to be here with you.
So it's a Poetry Slam and an open mic, and it's all wrapped around the library conference, which is happening this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for those who follow Wishkina Day and are some of our loyal supporters, they'll recognize it as just the same as our ordinary monthly open mics and Poetry Slam, except that we have the privilege of partnering with the Alaska Library Association this month. So we'll also have, I don't know, maybe about 50 librarians in the room from across the state, and we're pretty excited about that.
Cool. What's a special charge in your poetry? It puts a special charge in your poetry.
What puts a special charge in my poetry?
Being with the librarians.
Oh, well, I guess to be in a room with a bunch of people who you know love the written word, who appreciate a good poem, whether it's an old one they found in the stacks or whether it's a new one they're hearing freshly in front of them. I think just knowing that we're going to have 50 new guests who've maybe never experienced our Poetry Slams before is really exciting. It's like a very fancy dinner party for us.
What's the open mic consist of?
The open mic that precedes the slam every month is the part that's non-competitive. So for those who want to read a poem but don't want to be a part of the Poetry Slam, or they want to sing a song, or perhaps they want to recite something that they've read from a book and it's not their original work, that's the opportunity that they have to still present to the crowd.
MJ, are you excited about having a bunch of poets in?
I'm thrilled. It was, the Library Association comes to Juneau every 4 years, and so 4 years ago, Christy had her haiku booth where you did the on-demand haiku, and then the Wishkinadie has been happening, and I love both the poets that are presented, but also the whole format. There, I've never seen such a supportive environment with which to encourage and just. Everybody gets a full applause going up, a full applause coming down, and you feel so much better for having been there. Both the content of what people share and just the sheer sharing of words together. And so we came up with our theme of channel our voices, and we thought, what better? Poetry is a perfect way to channel voices. And I really believe that the Wishkinadie model and slam model is really transferable. So I'm really hoping that this will be really inspiring and will spread something similar to more of the communities throughout the state, either both in high schools or public or whatever interpretation people will take away.
Can I add, too, that it's really exciting for us because I think that for many of us who perform at Wishkinadie, our experiences of libraries growing up was like a place where, you know, you had to be quiet. And, you know, for a long time I said, I'm the girl getting shh in the library, you know. And it was kind of this very solitary environment is how we grew up feeling. And now we've now come to have slams at the library probably two or three times now. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember the first time, none of us could get over it. We were like, oh, my God, guys, we can yell in the library right now. We can make a lot of noise.
We had a DJ in the library.
Yeah, Manya was spinning tunes, you know. And so for us, it was just a real juxtaposition and a breakthrough moment of really forging this relationship with the library that I think is indicative of not just our public library, but libraries across the state and the nation that are really opening the doors and creating a library that is very community-based. It's about sharing a love for reading, for literacy, for the arts, and everybody who might use a library. And so it's exciting to see that converge right now on kind of a bigger stage here at Centennial Hall with more librarians than we've ever been shushed at. And and I'm really looking forward to that convergence of different communities towards the center goal of really making art together.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a DJ this performance on Friday.
Absolutely. Manu will be there, smoking hot as usual, playing all the best beats and keeping it rowdy.
MJ, do you consider yourself a poet?
I love words. I would not call myself a poet, but I love words, whether they're crafted or free form, or they bring me great peace and comfort.
Christy, what do you think of the role of rhythm in poetry?
I think our language in and of itself is so rhythmic. I think people like MJ walk around saying they're not poets, but the truth is we were just joking out in the hallway and playing games with words as we just had a general conversation. I think it's natural for people to speak in ways that they think sound beautiful. And I think when you get a bunch of poets together who are really paying attention to the way that words sound, the way their sentences roll together, it makes a beautiful rhythm. Worth staying in your mind the same way that a song might get stuck in your head. I think the beautiful thing about our slams is that there is such a varying degree of the way that rhythm plays in each person's poems, and I think the rhythms are different just as the music in Juno is different, just as the languages in Juno are different, and you really get to hear a lot of different tongues, and I mean that in more ways than languages spoken.
What do you think of the literary tools like alliteration and rhyming? Do you find yourself using those on purpose, or do you find that they're an organic byproduct?
For me personally, I love good alliteration no matter if I did it on purpose or not. I think when I accidentally do it, I still pause and I'm like, see what it did there.
Well, that was good, yeah.
Yeah,
that was
I like
good.
That, yeah. I'm teaching right now with third through fifth graders at Gastineau, and sometimes they bring up alliteration and rhyme before I ever did. And it's great that they've learned about those tools and can use them in their poems. But I think to me, the baseline in poetry is just really being able to see the world creatively, seeing the world as a beautiful place, and being able to really put that into words to tell someone else. And so that's what we really focus on, both in the classroom and at the slams, is, you know, tell your story, whether that's in a rap, whether that's in iambic pentameter, whether it's just a one really long love letter. You know, everybody's format for writing looks different, and we welcome all of it, and we definitely see all of it.
So is this performance on Friday open to the public?
Absolutely.
What time does it start? Where is it?
6:30 at Centennial Hall. If you want to sign up to either perform in the open mic or the slam, you want to be there at 6 p.m.
And you just got back from White Mountain?
I did just get back from White Mountain a couple weeks ago.
What were you doing there? Same thing that you're doing at Gastineau, artists in the schools?
Yep. Doing a spoken word residency with the school there, but it was my first time working with an entire K-12 school at one time. So that was a huge learning experience for me, and definitely a good trip, I hope, for the school. It culminated in a poetry slam, actually, where a third grader took the win.
Oh, awesome.
Goes to show you, yeah, the older you get doesn't necessarily mean you're a better poet. We had a lot of people really bring in their all from grade 5 to grade 12, for sure.
That's another question I have that either you can answer or both of you can answer. At what age do young people discover poetry? When does it click for them?
Oh, I think I was 5. I was raised in a home with books, and they were all around, and it was, I remember the first poem, it was a gift for my friend Felicity from Who Put Up Watermelon Pickles, and it was around a book. My dad got books to read from Scholastic, and I pulled it out, and I was in love, and it's just always been, if you are around words, I think you learn from the very beginning that it's always there.
Sounds like a good conversation starter for a party.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first book you read?
I know.
Nice. I was like, oh, that sounded like a love story.
Oh.
Well, I was 5 when I first met my first poem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would almost say to me, we accidentally redefine poetry later in life when, in fact, we've been speaking poetry from birth or from the first words. You know, I've been writing down phrases my son says since he was one, you know, because he might not have thought it was poetry, but when he says he likes the wind in the rain because it moves him, you know, I take something out of that, you know. When he describes the way the sun is shining through the holes in the trees, it's just, it's a beautiful experience because kids, they don't have the words for everything in the world yet. Their language is developing, and so the best thing they can do is describe the world through the very limited knowledge that they have so far. And those are similes. Those are metaphors. You know, we give them those words later. But the truth is they've been making comparisons since before they could even put sentences together and certainly before they can write. So,
and that distilling down to the essential, you know, that what is at the core. And usually there's that emotional component there. What do you care about that's expressed in this?
Mm-hmm. Christine Nami Erickson and MJ Grandy, thank you so much for coming down to the station today. I want to give the details about Friday's Poetry Slam again, please.
Centennial Hall, 6 o'clock for sign-ups to participate in the event itself. The slam starts at 6:30. Excuse me, the open mic starts at 6:30, moves into the slam, and we're going to have a great time. Hope to see lots of people there.
Thanks for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I don't think so. We brought some poems, but we'll have to save
those for
later.
Let's do that.
Do you have a minute?
Yeah, please.
It'll be a little more than a minute. This is a poem for two voices. It's called Book Lice from the book of Joyful Noise by Paul Fleischman. I was born in a fine old edition of Schiller.
While I started life in a private eye thriller.
We're book lice who dwell in these dusty bookshelves. Later, I lodged in Scott's works, volume 50.
While I passed my youth in an Agatha Christie.
We're book lice attached despite contrasting past. One day, while in search of a new place to eat,
he fell down seven shelves where we happened to meet.
We're book lice who chew on the bookbinding glue. We honeymooned in an old guidebook on Greece.
I missed Conan Doyle. He pined for his Keats.
We're book lice, fine mates despite different tastes. So we set up our home inside Roger's thesaurus.
Not far from my mysteries, close to his Horace.
We're book lice, adoring, despite her loud snoring. And there we've recited, and there we'll remain.
He nearby his Shakespeare, I near my Spillane.
We're book-loving book lice,
plain proof of the fact.
Which I'm certain I read in a book some months back.
That opposites often are known to attract.
You just take over the show for the rest of the hour, please.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. What an honor to be here with you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2015. Claudio Monteverdi's L'Orfeo received its premiere on this date, 1607, in Mantua, Italy, the first fully developed opera, a story of Orpheus who descends into Hades to retrieve his dead wife, Eurydice. There had been plays with musical accompaniment, but this was the first in which all the actors sang, and people liked it. It's the birthday of Wilhelm Grimm, born in Hanau, Germany, 1786, who with his brother Jakob collected oral folk tales and published them in 1812, many of them very dark and violent, which, once the brothers Grimm realized children were reading their book, they began adapting the tales to make them softer and sweeter, including Snow White, Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, a great boon to the Walt Disney Corporation. It's the birthday of Jane Hirschfield, born New York City, 1953. She was in the first graduating class at Princeton to include women. Not long after, she published her first poem, and then went off to Northern California to study Buddhism for the next 8 years, during which time she did not write at all. She said, "I don't think poetry is based just on poetry. It is based on a thoroughly lived life. And so I couldn't just decide I was going to write. I first had to find out what it means to live." Her most recent book of poetry is come thief. It's the birthday of Stephen Jobs, born in San Francisco in 1955 to two graduate students who put him up for adoption. He was adopted by Clara and Paul Jobs, an accountant and a machinist, and growing up, Jobs and his father would tinker with electronics in the garage. Dropped out of college after a semester, became a Buddhist, and in 1976, at the age of 21, he co-founded Apple Computers, where less than 10 years later, he unveiled the Macintosh, the first personal computer to catch on with the public, on which you simply clicked on icons rather than typing in precise text commands. Steve Jobs, who once said, "Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart." Here's a poem for today by Edward Field, "In the Morning." Often in the morning, the fog is thick over Jersey, sometimes like today, lifting later on to reveal with the clarity of a dream the wide river with its traffic, the cluttered far shore, and the hills beyond where hidden towns send up spires like messages. The river is never terribly obscured, even when the land beyond is absolutely white, and I can see the ferry leave the shore with a load of commuters like refugees from a land where faces have no face and bodies only exist if you put your arms around them. They come to the city where I am, although they do not find me, nor even know that they are searching for me. And as the morning progresses with its growing clarity, there is a world over there, after all. Anyway, for a while, precise as a dream, perfect and grimy until another night and its temperatures pulls down the fog from the air and obliterates it. In the Morning, a poem by Edward Field from Stand Up Friend With Me, published by Grove Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, but it's celebrating Christ and the people that make it happen.
Association's annual conference, Linda Wynn, the conference committee chair, Kate Fear, conference programs organizer, and Julie Niederhauser is just helping out all the way around. Thank you very much for coming into the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
So my first question is, about how many libraries are there in Alaska?
Well, there's about 103 public libraries in the state, and that doesn't include the school libraries and the libraries associated with the universities.
How do they differ, or what makes them the same, similar?
Well, they all serve people, which is important, and all of them provide resources and information to people in need. And they also enhance the community. They provide a place for community engagement, civic engagement, and they allow continuous lifelong learning.
How has the mission of the libraries changed?
Oh, well, Jess, The mission of the libraries have changed tremendously because of technology, and we have the online with library program that provides bandwidth and internet to the rural Alaskans. I believe we have brought over 100 libraries online this past few years. In comparison, back into the 80s, all we had was earth stations to connect us back at those days. So our mission is we're still providing services and connecting that information for everyone, even in rural Alaska, and this is an exciting time.
When the internet first came out, did librarians in general have a tough time seeing all these books in the stacks and people zooming into those television or computer monitors?
It was a high learning curve for us librarians to embrace the internet, especially the e-books. But they still need us. We're the ones that can organize and get the information to our patrons and to our people.
Does the mission of the library change with geography? I could say versus different communities as well.
Well, what I would like to say, Jeff, is some of our rural libraries, they are the only location in the community where people can come to access the Internet. They are the only place that has space where people can get together for community meetings and for programs. And in a lot of ways, our rural libraries are the most needed because people don't have a choice to go anywhere else. So those librarians, they wear many different hats, and they provide many different services. And oftentimes, those rural librarians are on a volunteer basis. They work just for the good feeling they receive in providing those services. They are on a volunteer basis. So, yeah.
On top of that, there also could be school librarians as well as community librarians. And also, cultural centers are being provided for the different indigenous peoples that we have here in the state of Alaska.
What are the challenges that libraries facing as a whole these days?
As a whole, would you say?
I would say funding.
I was going to say money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say you can't talk about money.
Well, like I mentioned, so many of our librarians, they don't receive, they work on a volunteer basis and they don't receive a stipend at all. And many of the buildings that they work in need maintenance. I have librarians that contact me because the roof is leaking. They can't secure the equipment inside. They can't make sure that things are kept safe. There's a lot of issues out there. But funding's important for all of our libraries.
I want to ask, what's fun about being a librarian? Why do you get up in the morning and go to the library and work?
Well, it's like a treasure hunt every day. It's like a treasure hunt every day. We get reference requests of all different types, and it's hard to stop sometimes when we can't find the information people need and we need to just tell them we can't find it. It's disappointing. So I get up feeling like I'm searching for buried treasure every day.
How about you, Linda? What do you think?
For me, I get excited, too, when I'm researching, looking for that particular document for senior management. And it's wonderful to look into history of family members that have participated in the ANSCA settlement for Alaska Natives. What about you, Julie?
Well, I think it's because libraries can make things happen in a community. You can provide resources that can make a positive change and a positive impact. And I think libraries are transformative for communities. And I think because they allow people to reach their potential. So I love what they do to people. But I'm an avid researcher as well.
And readers, right?
I'm talking with Linda Wynn, Kate Fair, and Julie Niederhauser about the Alaska State Library Association's annual conference, which is happening this week. How many librarians are coming to town?
We got the new numbers, about 211 librarians, including some guest speakers that are coming to Juneau. And we're really excited to welcome them to Juneau.
Kate, what are some of the things happening?
Sure. We have a terrific lineup of programs for libraries of all types, from school libraries to academic libraries. We have sessions ranging from early literacy to assessing websites. And some of the public might be interested in two of the sessions we have on Thursday, which are actually open to the public. One is called The Way of the Real Human Being, Alaska Native Ways of Teaching and Difficult Dialogues in Education, and that is Libby Roderick and Larry Mercurliff are coming to town for that session. It's at 9 o'clock on Thursday, and it runs until noon. And then Kazu Kibuishi will be talking about making comics and graphic novels, and that's from 12:30 to 4:20 on Thursday. And both of those sessions are $25. People can register on Thursday morning if they come to Centennial Hall and pay the fee at that time. So terrific opportunities for the public to participate in the conference as well.
Sounds like an incredible amount of fun.
Oh, it certainly is. We're also having the State of the State breakfast. We had invited our state legislators, dignitaries, and guests to come and enjoy some information that we would like to share of our legislative priorities and that we are serious about with our libraries and what we can offer in our communities. And that's Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. And this is probably our theme for our conference, Channeling Our Voices, is taking each one of our different roles as librarians. We have, like Katie said, academic. I'm a special librarian. There's public librarians, the state librarians. If we group together and bring our voices together, as you can hear, we were all compassionate about our different communities and monies and funding. If we put our voices together, our voice will become one, and it will be really loud when it comes to legislation, like right now, on funding for libraries.
Tim, put on your Swami hat. Bring out your crystal ball.
Yeah.
What kind of things do you see happening with libraries in the future?
I think the libraries are going to still be here in the future. I think it seems like every month there's more technology coming in, and we're the forerunners of learning this technology, and we're very good at organizing web sources and everything like that. So we're going to become even more technology savvy and still be able to provide this information for the upcoming generations.
I totally agree. And not only are we going to be providing them the information that they need right now, but we'll also be collecting and preserving the information as it happens. So there's a record of what is and what has been for the future.
And I think we'll always be community spaces for people to get together, to talk with each other, and meet on important issues.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for coming in. Is there anything you'd like to add about if we're going to ask?
No, I think that's everything. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Before we let you go, Katie, could you please repeat the public access times?
Sure. Two of the most interesting sessions, I think, for the public are on Thursday, 9 a.m. to noon, The Way of the Real Human Being, Alaska Native Ways of Teaching and Difficult Dialogues in Education, and then 12:30 to 4:20, Making Comics and Graphic Novels, and people should show up early if they can and register on Thursday at Centennial Hall. Those sessions are $25 each, and it's also possible for members of the public to register for the conference as a whole. If they would like, they can also do that at Centennial Hall.
And you have another author, Melissa Meyer?
Right. Marissa Meyer will be talking about From Fan Fiction to Fairy Tales, Melissa Meyer's path to publication. We also have a few other out-of-town speakers who will be coming, and we really appreciate their participation and thank MJ Grand and other members of the Library Association for bringing them to town.
I mentioned Marissa?
Marissa.
Marissa, because she's doing a book signing at Hard to Say Books in downtown in the Valley on Friday afternoon and evening.
Yes. Right. And so if I could just quickly add, that book signing event is going to be at Centennial Hall on February 27th from 2 to 3 p.m., and it follows the authors to Alaska Luncheon. So she'll be the featured guest speaker during the luncheon, and then afterwards we'll have the book signing event. And we have 23 local authors participating in that book signing event. It should be a fantastic event. Her site is Toys and Books is supporting it. So we encourage the public to come to pick up a book and get a chance to talk to their favorite author and have it signed right here in Juneau.
I would like to add one more thing, Jeff, if I may, and that is to thanks to some of our sponsors. That's part of our advocacy, is learning how to get sponsorship to support us and donations to help fund our conference. And one of our big hitters was the Scholastic, provided money for us, Friends of the Juneau Public Library, the University of Alaska Southeast, and Real Alaska Magazine. We just want to thank, if I miss anybody or the businesses here, you know who you are. We really appreciate your support, and we're looking forward to having a great conference here in Juneau and welcome our guests.
Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Saturday morning and the rain is pouring. Dad worked late last night and he's in there snoring. Same old stuff on TV, boring. So what if I can't go out and play? I know what I'd do today.
I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out.
Now I like like books and they like me. So when I go to the library, I sit down in my favorite chair and check to see who's there. Maybe one book, maybe two. Take me home, says Winnie the Pooh. And if we have to travel far, I'll bring my honey jar. Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Sleeping Beauty yawned and said, I'll come when I get out of bed. But Madeline says, let her nap, and jumped into my lap. The Cat in the Hat says, hey, I'll go. Don't take him, cries Pinocchio. Don't take that cat to your address. He always makes a mess. Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Mrs. Parker's back behind the checkout desk today. The Cheshire Cat jumps on her head and says, let's play. But Mrs. P says, goodness, are you sure you want all these? Oh, yes, we shout together. She says, shh, quiet, please.
I'm coming down to the library, taking out a book, check it in, check it out.
Seven dwarfs begin to shout, hey, take us with you, check us out. Then Cinderella gets her gown, and Babar grabs his crown. Then Curious George swings from the shelf, along comes Mother Goose herself. Out the door we danced and sang, the whole library rang.
Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
Hey, this is Bobby Mitchell coming to you from the PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus. Our concert this year is Saturday, February 28th at 7 o'clock. We have moved to the Northern Light Church on West 11th. Tickets at the door. We will be honoring strong women like Malala, Joan of Arc, Sojourner Truth, and Mother Teresa. We sing of equality and respect. So come and support your PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus on February 28th, 7 o'clock at the Northern Light Church. See you there.
38 minutes past the hour here on KTUO FM in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Sherry Eklund from Harborview Elementary School, here to talk about Dr. Seuss's birthday and the event Read Across America, which happens Saturday from 10 o'clock until noon. Sherry, thank you for coming by the station today.
Thank you for having us.
So for people who don't know, who is Dr. Seuss?
Well, Dr. Seuss wrote and illustrated 44 children's books, and He liked to play with words and have a good time and kind of poke fun at things. And we celebrate, his birthday is March 2nd, so we try to celebrate it. Here in Juneau, we celebrate it on the closest Saturday to his birthday, which happens to be this Saturday, February 28th.
And he wrote books like The Cat in the Hat, I think was one of his first books, if not the first book. And it was one syllable or two syllable words that kids could pronounce easily.
Right. Green Eggs and Ham, he wrote that based on a bet on how few words he could write a book with, and he used less than 50 words in the whole book. So he had a good time playing with words and loved reading and wanted children to engage and love reading and be creative and use their imagination.
So this event happens Saturday at 10 o'clock at DZ. What's going to be happening during the event?
Well, we'll have guest readers there that the children can come and gather around, and different adults and also high school athletes will be there, and they'll read to children. We'll have crafts, face painting, and one of the most popular things is we'll actually have a birthday cake for Dr. Seuss. Everybody, all the children that come can take home a free book, and we'll also have Friends of the Library has donated some gift certificates that each family that comes will send them home with a gift certificate. The event is all about motivating children to read and celebrating reading and in our community here in Juneau. It's sponsored by Juneau Education Association, and Read Across America Day was actually started in 1997 by the National Education Association of Teachers. So we want to just promote literacy in our school, in our community.
Seems like Dr. Seuss was the first book for a lot of people. Was it your first book?
Oh, well, one of my favorite, well, I'd say my all-time favorite Dr. Seuss book is Green Eggs and Ham. It's one of my first memories of reading and being really successful as an early reader. And my parents can probably attest that I read it hundreds of times. In fact, I think it's one of those books you kind of end up memorizing because you're successful as a child and you read it over and over, and it's fun.
Sherry Eklund, here to talk about Read Across America, again, Saturday, 10 o'clock until noon, and free books.
And the event is free, so everybody come out. It's for kids of all ages. You're never too old to fall in love with a book.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I don't think so. We just hope everybody comes and enjoys it. It's at Santa Kahini Middle School, 10 to noon.
Oh, I frequently think every now and then of the glorious fruit of the noble hen. Eggs! Eggs! E-double-G-S eggs. My knowledge of eggs is tremendously wide. I've eaten them boiled, I've eaten them fried, poached and shirred and deviled and scrambled, omelets, schmomelets, cobbled and frambled. I've eaten them beaten and swizzled and swizzled, frizzled, gadizzled, bamboozled and fuzzled. I know every way that an egg can be guzzled. And thinking of eggs reminds me of Sam, whose favorite dish is green eggs and ham.
I am Sam. Sam I am. That's Sam I am. That's Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
He does not like them, Sam I am. He doesn't like green eggs and ham.
Would you like them here or there?
I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
He doesn't like green eggs and ham. He doesn't like them.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
I would not like them in a house. I would not like them with a mouse. I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere.
Green eggs and ham. He doesn't like green eggs and ham. He doesn't like them. He doesn't like green eggs and ham.
44 minutes after the hour, and you are tuned in to KRNN. Juno, T-O-O, FM in Juno. In the studio with me next is Kristen Grillo, here to talk about Montessori Open House informational meetings, which are happening later on this week. Kristen, thank you very much for coming down to the stadium.
Thank you. Thanks.
So for people that don't know, what is Montessori and what's the style of teaching?
So Montessori teaching is based on the philosophy of Montessori, Maria Montessori, who was a scientist and educator and developed through a lot of observation and working with young children a method of connecting with kids and helping them access learning and access the world around them. It's about cosmic education and fitting it, figuring out where you fit in the bigger scheme of the world. It's also, on a practical level in the classroom, it's about individualized work and instruction for students and having students move in their learning at their own pace, but also with the help and expertise of a teaching guide to help them move along.
What would you say is the most unique thing about Montessori education?
I think if you looked into a Montessori classroom, the most unique thing would be a difference in how the classroom might be structured. There isn't necessarily a separation of their day into reading and science and math. It's more holistically all put together. They have what's called the great period, which is a 3-hour working period in the morning when kids develop a learning plan with the help of their teacher and do independent work or collaborative work as appropriate for their learning plan. And they're not all, you know, sitting and doing the work all together as a whole class like it might look like in a traditional classroom.
How many Montessori schools are there in Juneau?
We have 2 Montessori schools in Juneau. We have Montessori Borealis, which is the public school option through the Juneau School District. And then also over in Douglas is the preschool and kindergarten program, Juneau Montessori.
What about the involvement of parents?
So parent involvement in Montessori Borealis in the public school is as much involvement as a parent wants to have. We always have parents involved in going out into the community with students, helping with activities in the school as well. So it's a great way to, it's a great place to be involved as a parent.
Tell me what's going to be happening with the informational meetings and open house, please.
Yeah, so we're pretty excited at Montessori Borealis because we're moving into a new phase of becoming our own school next year and expanding our program. So we're adding a preschool kindergarten classroom and some more first through third grade opportunities. And so we have some information meetings this week, Thursday night at 6 and Saturday at 10 for parents to come over to Marie Drake and see what it looks like. Check it out, hear some information about it, and also set up some times to come and do an observation during the school day so they can see what it's like in action. So those this Thursday and Saturday are good times to come, find out about the program, get some specifics, and get your questions answered about the program.
All right, is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
There is an application process to become a student at Montessori Borealis because it's an optional program that's available to students throughout the Juneau School District, no matter where you live. So there's an application that can be found at the Juneau School District's website, www.junoschools.org. The applications are due April 17th for this first round of the placement process, which will happen in May. So if you have questions, come to our information nights, check us out on the web, check us out through the school district's website, and get those applications in by April 17th.
Kristen, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. With their big bill, naked head, and long legs, wood storks look ungainly, almost ugly, but they are perfect at what they do. Large black and white wading birds of Florida and the American tropics. They feed in shallow water by moving slowly along with head down and bill slightly open. When they contact a fish, the bill snaps shut in just 25 milliseconds. The fastest reaction time known for a bird. But it takes a lot of small fish to fill up a stork, so they are selective about their feeding areas. Wood storks nest in trees, often in big colonies, and they nest only when conditions are just right for them. Because of their feeding technique, they thrive in the early part of the dry season, when receding floodwaters concentrate fish in small pools. But this method of feeding is effective only when the rainy season is normal. In some years, increased droughts brought about by global climate change prevent wood storks from breeding at all. Then, their perfect adaptation to their environment becomes a worrisome drawback. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Oh.
Opera to Go presents the delightful and whimsical opera, The Cunning Little Vixen. Animal and human creatures interact in a tale centering around a young vixen and her adventures, sung in Czech with projected English translations. The production features great singers, a corps of dancers from Juno Dance Theater, and members of the Amalga Chamber Orchestra. Open Saturday, February 28th at 7:30 p.m. with a matinee on Sunday at 3 at Thunder Mountain High School. Tickets available at the Jack, the bookstores, and online at operatogo.net.
Our next speaker is Laura Kurt. When Laura first came to Juneau, her brother-in-law told a friend that he gave her 6 months before she fled back east. His friend replied, "I give her 6 weeks." But it was her brother-in-law that moved away a couple of decades ago, and it's Laura who is still here. She continues to enjoy Juneau and all it has to offer. She is currently single and tier one. What an opportunity. Please help me welcome Laura.
Seven years ago, I took a vacation with my daughter Brianna and her friend Callie that involved planes, trains, automobiles, boats, space cadets, the military, and what Callie still refers to as the most terrifying moment of her life. It wasn't too good for my daughter either. Things started to go wrong when I lost my daughter. We were touring Washington, D.C. at the time. And yes, I lost my daughter in the city where they elected a mayor to his fourth term after he got out of jail for crack cocaine. We were transferring from one subway to another, and as we're going down the escalator to the second platform, I make the mistake of saying, "Hurry, girls, our train is here." Now, you'd think my daughter, who the week before had been diagnosed with a stress fracture of her left leg and was in one of those medical boots, would have been the slowest of the three of us. But no, she wasn't. She reaches the subway just about two steps before us, and she leaps onto the subway car while the doors are closing. She's on the inside, I'm on the outside, banging on the doors like a crazed mother, and there's these men in suits looking at us. And they look at me and shrug their shoulders. And my daughter looks at me and waves goodbye. Such a comedian. And she disappears. Thank goodness there are cell phones. And she was in a tunnel and the reception was bad, but I understood that one of the suits told her to get off at the next station. And thank goodness a train came just a couple of minutes after that one, and Callie and I jumped on. Now, we get on this train and I immediately assess the situation. There's one free seat at the back of the train. And I try and persuade Callie not to sit there. But she's 15 and doesn't listen to me and goes and sits down and then figures out why I didn't want her to go there. The guy with the long blonde hair and the not so clean clothes was really, really high. I'm talking orbiting other planets without a ship high. She got a really big clue when the train's moving and swaying back and forth, and he's standing there swaying back and forth and starts singing to everybody. Surfing on the train, cocaine. And he's getting into arguments with people, and anyway, she's trapped on the other side of him and can't get to me. And she looks at me with these really big eyes and this expression that says, "Save me." Finally, the guy moves just a little bit, and there's an opening. So in order to get her to me without getting his attention, I say, "Callie, come here. I want to show you this really interesting subway map." So she comes over, and I keep up the pretense, and I say, "Look, this is where we were, and here's where we're going." At which point the guy behind me says, "Excuse me, ma'am, you're on the wrong train." So I get off the next station, and my cell phone rings, and it's my daughter. "Mom, where are you?" "Well, honey, I'm at Arlington National Cemetery." "Mom, there's nobody here. There's nobody in this station but one homeless crazy person who's having an argument with somebody who isn't there. And they're both heading this way." I find out later that Callie that night calls her parents and tells her parents this whole story.
They, in turn, go to their church and tell the entire congregation of their church this story. Now, this congregation happens to know both girls, and they start thanking God and praising the Lord that it was my daughter I lost and not Callie. And I kind of agree with them. But what I thank God for is the military. Because who shows up at the station but a man and a woman in fatigues, probably coming over from the Pentagon? And they walk over to my daughter and say what many adults would say in the same situation. They say, "What are you doing here sitting there all alone?" And she explains to them what happened. And they say, "That's okay. We'll guard you until your mother shows up." And they do. They don't sit down and talk to her. They don't even face her. They stand with their backs to her, feet slightly apart, arms folded across their chest, and glare at everybody as they arrive at the station until I show up. So that's what I'm grateful for. The military, who takes their promise to defend America seriously and defend Americans, including 15-year-olds who get lost in the subway.
As Laura Kurt recorded live at February's Mudrooms, the whole show of Mudrooms will be on the air Thursday at 7 p.m. on KTUO News. Coming up tomorrow, June afternoon, Christina Ferrer will be here to highlight the hospital's Blue Heron gift shop. We'll learn about this weekend's Carnival of Juno, talk to people about Canvas and their art talks in the Canvas series. We'll talk with Mark Fox, this Wednesday's speaker for the Alaska Design Forum. Writers Almanac, Inferno, Music, and More tomorrow on the Juno afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a few sprinkles in the evening, patchy fog, low temperatures around 33 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, cloudy skies with a chance of light rain, high temperatures around 41 degrees. Thursday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures around 40 degrees. Friday and Friday night, mostly clear skies with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 40 degrees.